Good morning. We'll do this fast so the roads don't get icy. How about that? I definitely did not write a longer sermon than average today. We'll trim the fat. How about that? In today's gospel reading from John 2, 1 through 11, we are invited to witness this first recorded miracle performed at a wedding celebration in Cana. This story is ripe with material for somebody who stands on this side of the podium. There's like 10 different sermons you can preach from the wedding at Cana story, and they're all great. Like one of my favorites, which we're not doing today, at the end of the story, you find out that Jesus' disciples believed in him as a result of this miracle. But there's an unstated fact here that I find fascinating. He had disciples before he started doing miracles, which means that you can follow Jesus without needing him to do magic in your life. That sermon preaches really, really well. There were people who believed in him long before he was doing miracles and signs. I think that matters. We could talk about all sorts of things. I think we tend to avoid this story because historically we tend to think this complicated issue of wine plus Jesus is a mess that we don't want to always step into. That's regrettable. This story it's rich. This setting, this wedding setting, is one of joy. There are few scenarios in the Gospels that start with joy. That's usually the ending point, not the beginning point, for most of these Gospel stories. Most Gospel stories start with something really awful. Like, there was a man with a withered hand. There was a guy that could not walk. There was a man who was blind. They don't start with joy, they end with joy. This story starts with joy and ends with more joy. It has fellowship. It has promise. This is a wedding. It's a moment of union and hope for the future. But as the celebration unfolds, a problem arises. The wine runs out. For the hosts, this is more than an inconvenience. It's a crisis that threatens to turn joy into shame. It is a real problem, not something that's embarrassing. This is much worse than that. And in this moment of need, steps Jesus, quietly, powerfully, fixing the problem. And this miracle isn't just about solving a practical problem. It's a sign, John tells us, revealing the abundance of God's kingdom. So as we hear this text, let us consider how God meets us in our own moments of scarcity, bringing hope, renewal, abundance through his Son. The word of the Lord from John 2, verses 1 through 11. There was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to this wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to me and to you? My hour has not yet come." So his mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." And now, standing there, just happened to be 6 stone water jars, specifically for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. And Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled the jars up to the brim. And he said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the person in charge of the banquet." So they took it. And when the person in charge tasted the water that had become wine and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water certainly knew, that person called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first and then the inferior wine after the guests are already drunk, but you kept the good wine until now." And Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. At the heart of this story, we find a wedding celebration, a moment meant to be filled with joy and abundance, but an unexpected problem arises. The wine runs out. In the culture of first century Judea, this is not an inconvenience. It's a serious breach of hospitality. This is on the third day of the wedding. Weddings typically at this point can last up to 2 weeks. 7 days is the minimum. 2 weeks is kind of the fullest. It's a long time. If your wine runs out on the third day, it's a problem. It was a serious breach of expectation. A host's reputation was tied to their ability to provide for their guests. And running out of wine at a wedding would bring shame not only to the bride and groom, but their entire families. They would be seen as inviting people to something that they could not afford to invite them to. What should have been this day of joy teeters on the edge of humiliation and disappointment. It's not just that the wine is out. Reputations are on the line. And this was before credit scores. Reputations were credit scores. This would ruin their ability to function in society. I know it doesn't seem like that when you take the words wine, wedding, and run out and put them together in 21st century terminology, but in first century world, this is a problem. And Mary notices the problem and brings it to his attention. They have no wine. Technically, she doesn't ask him to do anything. In her defense, she didn't ask for anything. She just points out a situation. And his initial response seems puzzling. I don't think many of us got away with calling our mother a woman. For example, woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. It's a statement that signals a deeper reality. He knows exactly what she wants. I bet they've done this dance before. Jesus operates according to God's timing, though, not Mary's urgency. But this moment captures a tension, doesn't it, between human need and divine purpose? We always feel like we urgently need something from God, and God often says, not the best time. But these empty wine jars, they symbolize the limits of human effort. It's not that this family didn't try. They really did put all their best efforts into planning this wedding. Just everybody else had bigger eyes, bigger stomachs, bigger wants than this family could provide for. The scarcity that defines so much of life in a broken world is what we see in these empty wine jars. The people at the wedding face a problem they cannot fix on their own. They don't have the resources to have more wine. If they did, they would have already had it. They've got nothing to offer anyone. It's a moment of vulnerability. It's a reminder that human resources, no matter how carefully planned, are often insufficient. Yet in this moment of lack, the stage is set for the glory of God to be revealed. The scarcity at the wedding in Cana becomes an opportunity for Jesus to reveal the abundance of God's kingdom. When Mary brings the problem to Jesus, her faith in his ability to act is evident. Even when his response suggests hesitation, she still tells the servants, do whatever he tells you. And these words, they point to the heart of the miracle. There's this obedience and trust in Jesus' abundance that opens the door for God's work to transform this wedding. So he instructs the servants to fill 6 large stone jars with water. These jars were typically used for purification rituals, not for wine. These were not just empty 5-gallon BPA-free bottles. These had a purpose. These vessels, symbols of the old order, they stand as a reminder of something of purification rituals, right? They bring cleanliness. They allow humans to attempt to achieve cleanliness before God. And here they're repurposed for this moment for something new. The water is transformed into wine, abundant, rich, the finest quality. I don't know what varietal, don't ask. Doesn't matter, it's the best one. This act is more than a practical solution to a problem. It's a sign of his identity, his mission. By turning this water into wine in particular, Jesus reveals the abundance, the joy of God's kingdom, breaking into human scarcity. The extravagance of this miracle. It produces 120 to 180 gallons of wine. They're not going to outdrink Jesus at this wedding. He has made sure of it. It points to this overflowing generosity of God's grace. How many times over and over again the New Testament tells us about the abundance of God? Paul runs out of words by the time he gets to Philippians, and so he very poorly says, the love of God is abundantly abundant. Paul is he's a very eloquent guy, and Paul doesn't have words for this anymore, so he just says God is abundantly abundant. This is one of those moments. And John tells us this is the first of Jesus' signs through which he reveals glory. This miracle is a foretaste. The abundance of this wedding is a foretaste. It's just the start of, it's just the beginning, it's just the tip of the iceberg of this greater transformation that Jesus is going to bring. This new covenant in his blood, where emptiness is replaced with abundance and human hearts are made new, is going to be so much more than 180 gallons of wine at a wedding. I imagine there had to be a moment where Jesus looks at his mother afterwards and says, you think this is cool? You ain't seen nothing yet. There had to be some sort of wait till you see tomorrow expectation of, if he can do this at a wedding, what can he do for the rest of the country? Everybody had to expect something from this moment. This foretaste of abundance became the expectation for everything else. We see this glimpse of a boundless grace. The problem of scarcity at the wedding in Cana is not new, and it never went away. The struggles that we face in our own lives and the world around us, our own empty wine jars, are a powerful symbol of human limitation. Times when our resources, our strength, our plans run out are just quite not enough. We all know what it feels like to pour ourselves into a project of some kind only to find out that when we turn it in, we still get an F. I don't mean just in school, I mean just work, life, pick something. How many of you have been underneath the car changing the oil and then you see 10 other things that are broken? We know human scarcity. It's not limited to physical needs. It extends to our emotional, our spiritual realities. We know the weight of relationships that are strained by misunderstandings, the exhaustion of trying to meet impossible expectations, the frustrations of broken systems that just never seem to be able to really, truly deliver the justice that we want. On the global scale, scarcity manifests as hunger, poverty, conflict. Despite the abundance of resources in our world, we see gaps between those who have and those who do not. Closer to home, our own lives reflect moments of emptiness, don't they? Whether in our faith, our relationships, our jobs, our sense of purpose, we all know empty wine jars. And this wedding in Cana reminds us how easily it is that joy can give way to fear. How quick those tables can turn when our insufficiencies are exposed. And like the host of the wedding, we grasp at anything, trying to hide our shame, our inadequacy, when our best efforts are just not enough. We know what it feels like to give our best efforts and someone say, have you tried harder? This is as hard as it gets. This is all I had. The world offers temporary solutions. We try to mask our emptiness, or distract us from it at the very least, but these quick fixes, they don't satisfy. They leave us where we started, empty. And in those moments, we are reminded of how much we need something greater than ourselves, a real power that can turn emptiness into fullness, to restore hope where despair seems to reign. We just always hope in the wrong things. This miracle at Cana, it's not just a story of a transformation in the past. It points to this ongoing work of Jesus in our world and in our lives. Just as he turned water into wine, Jesus continues to take our moments of scarcity and transform them into abundance, time after time. The kingdom of God is marked by this kind of renewal where what is broken is restored where fear is replaced with joy, where hope emerges even in the most desperate of circumstances. We encounter emptiness, the loss of purpose, strained relationships, faith that feels dry or distant, and Jesus meets us in those moments of need, inviting us to trust him, to allow his transforming power to work within us. And he takes what we have, even when it seems insignificant or insufficient, and uses it to display his glory and says, "Watch this." Within the church, we see this transformation in how God equips his people. Paul reminds us in 1 Corinthians 12 that the Spirit gives diverse gifts to each believer, not for personal gain, but for the common good. This is water into wine territory. These gifts enable us to serve one another, building a community that reflects the abundant life of God's kingdom. This is how God takes water and makes wine out of it. One powerful example that I think demonstrates God's abundance and our own emptiness occurred on the night of January 27th, 1956, during the Montgomery bus boycott. Dr. King had been receiving death threats daily, and the weight of leading this movement was overwhelming, and he was about ready to call it. That night, after yet another threatening phone call, he sat at his kitchen table, overwhelmed by fear for his family, uncertainty, questioning whether or not he could continue with this work. And he gave up in that moment. He surrendered that fear in prayer, pouring out all of his worries to God, admitting his own inability to do it. And he later described hearing an inner voice saying, "Stand up for righteousness, stand up for truth, and God will be at your side forever." And it was that profound sense of God's presence that renewed his courage and resolve. And he went on to lead with boldness, not because the circumstances changed, but because he experienced an abundant strength and peace that definitely didn't come from anything he was doing. It was not his own. It was from outside. It was incontrovertibly coming from God. And he knew this. He felt it. And even if everybody else thought he was crazy and he made up the whole thing, he didn't care. He knew this was real. And he knew that the strength he had wasn't his own, because he found the limits of his strength and courage, and God allowed him and empowered him to push past them. That is water into wine. It's a moment that illustrates how God meets us in our times of need, when our human resources, our energy, our strength, our confidence is depleted. God's abundance fills the gap, empowering us to continue in our mission of justice and peace for God's kingdom. And it's through this experience that Dr. King not only found the courage to press on, but became a vessel of God's transforming work, inspiring others with hope and a promise of God's kingdom breaking into the struggles of this world. What a critical night. In the world, Jesus' transforming power is still at work, calling us to partner with him in acts of love, justice, restoration. The kingdom of God is breaking into our reality, turning scarcity into abundance, inviting all of us into the joyful celebration of his grace, where joy can become even greater joy, where abundance can become even more abundant. And as we come to the Lord's table, we are reminded of the abundance and joy of God's kingdom, revealed so vividly in this first miracle at Canaan. Just as he transformed water into wine, Jesus transforms our lives through his grace, inviting us into a deeper fellowship with him. The bread and the cup that we share are not just symbols. They're signs of his love and sacrifice. This might have been his first sign at the wedding in Cana. His ultimate sign was his death and resurrection. His blood poured out for the forgiveness of sins. Here at this table, there is no scarcity. I know it looks like it because it's really a scarce amount of stuff that we serve. But there is no scarcity in the symbol, only the overflowing abundance of God's grace. And all who come to this table in faith are welcomed into that celebration of God's kingdom, where Christ offers hope, restoration, new life. And so we come with joy and gratitude, ready to receive, to be transformed, and to believe. Let's stand and sing.